It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Live from everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Here we go, here we go. Coming to you live from the greatest country in the world, broadcasting from the tippy top of the world famous Fox News headquarters in New York City. It is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla, fired up to bring you another big day of top shelf radio in a bottom feeding political world. It's a mess out there today. Get out your mop, kids. We got some aisles to clean at 888-788-9910. 888-788-9910. Always the phone number if you want to be a part of the show. I should also point out it is the phone number if you don't want to be a part of the show. I think that would be great radio. Call us up. Read us our truth. You know what I mean? We're into that. This is an all skate. The only real rule, we say it every day, man. You can be a Republican, you can be a Democrat, just don't be a that is all. Okay, this show today, it's a little bare bones off the top. It's, very MTV unplugged. Normally there's some pyrotechnics and big electric guitar riffs. A lot of political razzle-dazzle, couple jokes, couple audio drops. But we have to start on a more somber note today really quickly and just give a shout-out to the late, great Vin Scully, who left us at the age of 94 late last night. You are not a broadcaster. You do not belong behind a microphone in any capacity. You shouldn't be reading the lottery numbers on the air if you don't have great reverence and respect and admiration for Vin Scully's contributions to broadcasting and to the fabric of this country. This is a guy who called Dodger games for 67 years. You know, starting out in Brooklyn, working alongside a Red Barber, another icon, making his way out to Los Angeles. A guy called 25 World Series games. 25 World Series. The iconic Kirk Gibson walk-off home run. He was there when Jackie Robinson, was playing for the Dodgers and integrating Major League Baseball. You know, Vin Scully, probably the classiest guy ever to do it. So if, you know, you're going to try to do this profession that I do, with any credibility, with any integrity, and you want the audience to recognize your own instincts, your own acumen, then you have to stop and shout out a level of greatness that we've never seen. Not only the level he did it at, but the length he did it for. You know, I mean, the only person you can think of that served in a capacity as high profile as Vin Scully, you might say the Queen of England, but the Queen of England isn't banging out a 162-game season. Like, she waves on a balcony, goes to Balmoral, and calls Meghan Markle a whore. That's like most of her work week. You know, like, Vin Scully was the man. Do you understand? Yeah, I'll give it to the Queen. You know, her contribution to baseball was what? She tried to kill Reggie Jackson in an Anaheim Angels game in the movie The Naked Gun. But Vin Scully was there day in and day out for 67 years. So much so, it's really funny. But my first time at Dodger Stadium was in 2004 with my brother Mike. And at the end of the game, we had moved around the stadium because, you know, we'd never been there before. It was a big deal. We wanted to see all the vantage points and check it out. And at the very end of the game, we met two guys who had been season ticket holders since the Dodgers moved out to L.A. in the late 50s. And they sat behind home plate in the very last row of what is the upper deck at Chavez Ravine. And they both had a pair of headphones on. And they had listened to the game with Vin Scully broadcasting it while they sat in the stadium every day for, I don't know, must have been 50 years by then. And they were like, oh, man, you don't understand. I know you're a New York guy, but you would love Scully. And I was like, no, dude, you don't understand. Everybody loved Vin Scully. Like, Vin Scully was baseball. And he was as good and as classy and just a throwback to a better time in this country where baseball really did represent common culture, a place where people did legitimately put their political differences aside to go just watch a ball game, man. And that was my favorite thing about him. I know Vin Scully is one of the ambassadors to the best times in this country, which was, you know, baseball being the national pastime. Now it feels like the national pastime is, you know, fighting on Twitter or canceling a comedian. I don't like a joke you told. Were you at the show? No. Like, what does it matter? I don't know. I just don't like it. You should be fired. Well, thanks. That's a dumb time to be alive. Vin Scully was there for some of the brightest moments this nation has known. And to me, he was just always one of the best things about baseball and being a baseball fan. I mean, we were lucky to have the Major League Game of the Week when we were kids, so you could hear a little bit more of him out here on the East Coast. But he was just the best. I mean, there's really not a hell of a whole lot else I can say. You know, I'm a veritable rodeo clown when you throw me on a microphone. I'm a former cab driver, and I get by on, like, relatability, but I don't actually know what I'm doing. Like, Vin Scully was the belle of the ball. So we can't have a legitimate show today with any integrity if we don't at least give a game ball to Vin Scully off the top. So there you go. I think one of the hallmarks of what made him so good and made him such a draw was the fact that you really did buy what he was selling. And what I mean by that is Vin Scully recognized as an announcer that the game was the star. You know, if you think about his most iconic call, it's probably the Kirk Gibson home run in game one of the 88 World Series. There's a drive deep to right and she's gone, and that's it. Just lets it go. You know, adds a little commentary as Gibson rounds the bases. But it's not like the modern broadcaster who thinks you've tuned in to see them because they're making $50 million because they're an ex-quarterback or some stupid thing, and they just talk, and you're like, would you shut up? I'm watching the game. You know, Vin Scully realized you were there for the game, and, you know, the added color he added to that experience is what made him so good. He wasn't there to be the star. He recognized who the star was, and for that, you had a trust in his broadcasting abilities, you know, that made every interaction with him just a treat. It felt like you were watching the game with an old friend, and again, you always bought what he had to say. Sadly, we don't have a Vin Scully in the White House right now.
Tell him like it is.
And man, could we use one. We begin here on the political side of this show today with a very unique moment. You know when they say, like, I live in New York, they're like, you got to be on the lookout for anything strange or unusual all the time. Well, there's something strange or unusual happening in the media. People are throwing the challenge flag at this White House with a little more regularity lately. Now, I know a lot of that happens to be that Biden is polling at a historically low number, and media entities want to distance themselves from this monster they created. They shilled for this guy in the campaign trail, so much so that they gave us all a talk. Do you remember when Biden got elected, gave his first address to the nation, and they told us the adults were back in the room?
Anybody who has any connection to reality about what is going on around them should have watched that and said, the adults are back in the room.
It seems as though we have a professional adult once again in the White House who's just simply doing the work.
Really, the theme, I would say, is the adults are back.
Still, it is a relief to have adults in charge.
Now we have adults in the White House.
Okay, the adults are back in the room.
There is a sense, I think, the world over that the adults have returned.
We have an adult in the White House now, and it's glorious.
You're a bald-faced liar. A liar.
I mean, well, he's technically not lying. We do have an adult in the room. He just doesn't know what room he's in.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing.
Okay, it's a mess. And the point is, it's not every day that you'll hear multiple news outlets throwing a challenge flag at a Democratic administration, especially not when they shilled as hard as they did to make this administration a reality. But right now that's going on, and it's going on in a weird moment because most of the jaundiced eye the media is looking at the White House with this week has to do with this terrorist killing in Afghanistan, if you understand. They killed the number two man in Al-Qaeda, a guy who was a mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks, a guy, obviously, whose death constitutes addition by subtraction. This is a win for America. Get rid of this dirtbag. Okay, but it raised a significant question. The question being, what the hell is Al-Qaeda doing in Afghanistan? If the whole point of going there was to rid Afghanistan of terror groups, if we spent 20 years and trillions of dollars ultimately handed it back over to the Taliban, which is in fact a terror group. Okay, but we were assured by Joe Biden This is no big deal. They're not a safe harbor for terrorists. You don't have to worry about it. And we're just leaving Afghanistan and everything's going to be fine.
That is a fact check false.
Lo and behold, we find out this guy is, in fact, hanging out there. And a lot of people in the media are now saying, you know, at ABC, at CBS, like, yo, wait, whoa, this is not what we were told. And again, it's a really fine needle to thread because I want to applaud the administration for killing the terrorist, but it's also worth noting that this speaks even more volumes of the magnitude of just how botched the Afghan withdrawal was. Now, yesterday, they had Jake Sullivan making the rounds. They had John Kirby making the rounds. Okay. He was going toe-to-toe with Peter Doocy. It was actually pretty fascinating stuff. Let me start there. It's clip 11.
So we know that the Taliban was harboring the world's most wanted terrorist. You guys gave a whole country to a bunch of people that are on the FBI most wanted list. What did you think was going to happen?
Take issue with the premise that we gave a whole country to terrorist groups. I mean, again, I'd encourage you to ask.
Harboring the world's number one terrorist. How is that not giving a country permission to have terrorists just sit on a balcony?
The question, I mean, Peter, the way you asked that, it makes it sound like we owned Afghanistan a year ago. But we said at the time that as we depart Afghanistan, we're going to keep vigilant. We're going to stay ready. And we're not going to let Afghanistan become a safe haven for terrorists who threaten our homeland.
I mean, but think about that. Okay, we're not going to let Afghanistan become a safe haven for terrorists who threaten our homeland. Yo, he was there. He was hanging out. Yeah, we got a tip. We killed him. So on the one end, you take Kirby at his word that they didn't just let the guy hang out. Once they confirmed his whereabouts, they went out and nuked him. But the point is, in leaving Afghanistan the way we created a vacuum. We left behind $85 billion worth of weapons. And it has, in fact, created the perception that, yeah, we killed one guy. But how many other Al-Qaeda sympathizers are out there?
I think he's got a point.
And again, you expect Peter Doocy to ask this hard and fair question because that's his job. Peter Doocy is a real member of the media. The job in the media is to hold people in power accountable. Okay, for far too long, the Democrats, the liberal media outlets haven't shown any interest in that because it's more important for them to win the election in this country than it is to keep this country in a good position.
Journalism in this country is dead and buried.
But to their credit, they pushed back a little bit. So Jake Sullivan was also out making the media rounds yesterday. He got some pushback on the Today Show. Okay, this is clip 8.
As you well know, it was just about 1 year ago that the president ordered all U.S. forces out of Afghanistan. And within months, it appears that the leader of Al-Qaeda was able to move right back in downtown Kabul. Does this signal to you that Afghanistan has once again become a safe harbor for terrorists?
Well, I think it's strange to call it a safe harbor when we just took out the leader of Al-Qaeda sitting on his balcony in Kabul. So, no, it does not signal that to me. What it signals to me, Savannah, is that the president has made good on his word when we left. He said the United States did not need to keep sending thousands of American men and women to fight and die in Afghanistan after 20 years of war to keep this country safe. He said we would be able to continue to target and take out terrorists in Afghanistan without troops on the ground.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
That's the question he's being asked, and he's not quite answering it, okay? He was asked a similar question on Good Morning America. Hey, man, is this a failure of the policy in Afghanistan? A lot of people feel that way. Because if you remember when Biden left Afghanistan, he assured us that Al-Qaeda was gone. They weren't even there. Here's that clip, clip 7.
Look, let's put this thing in perspective here. What interest do we have in Afghanistan at this point with Al-Qaeda gone? We went to Afghanistan for the express purpose of getting rid of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, as well as getting Osama bin Laden. And we did.
And again, we're glad they got Osama bin Laden. But that was Joe Biden in August of 2021 saying Al-Qaeda is gone. Is Al-Qaeda gone?
The answer would be no.
Okay, John Kirby famously told us a year ago he can't give us an estimate. He doesn't know how much Al-Qaeda is still in Afghanistan. This morning he was on America's Newsroom with the great Bill Hemmer, and Hemmer asked him that as well. Okay, how many Al-Qaeda fighters are left in Afghanistan? And he was like, well, I don't want to get into specifics. The point is they're not gone. Okay, even Good Morning America raised that issue with Jake Sullivan. Here it is, clip 10.
As you know, some of your critics say the fact that he was right there in downtown Kabul, as Senator James Inhofe put it, reflects the total failure of the Biden administration's policy towards that country. Your response?
My response is, number one, Ayman al-Zawahiri is no more. We have taken the leader of al-Qaeda off the battlefield. That is success.
But how will the United States hold the Taliban accountable for violating the Doha Agreement, harboring the leader of al-Qaeda?
Well, first, we have shown, not just in word but in deed, we're prepared to take action to defend our interests, and the Taliban understand we'll keep taking action to ensure that no al-Qaeda leader who is threatening the United States can possibly have safe haven in Afghanistan or anywhere else in the world.
You gotta do better than that.
Okay, in politics, the rule is always answer the question you feel like answering, not the one they asked you. Okay, the question George Stephanopoulos asked him is, what are you going to do to the Taliban for violating their agreement that they wouldn't be harboring any terrorists now that we left the country? He's like, well, we're going to kill the terrorists. Yes, fine, and we want you to. We applaud that. But the fact remains the Taliban is harboring terrorists. You know, the Taliban, the terror group we went there to stop that's now running the country with $85 billion worth of our weapons.
This could be a problem.
It already is.
Critics are calling it the show of the year.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Guys, are you the same guy that you were 10 years ago? Everybody's been there. You wake up one morning, you feel like you're getting old, man. Stuff hurts. What do I do? One idea is to use the powerful testosterone booster in Nugenix Total T because it will revive your energy. It'll power up the workouts, might even put the old fire back in the bedroom. Hey, girl, your old self is back. You'll feel amazing on this stuff. So tap the brakes on the aging process because every day that passes is a day you lose testosterone. That means less muscle, means less energy, and it does mean less get up and go in the bedroom. And are you really ready to lose all of it? The shape, the muscle, the energy. Are you ready to get old? Okay, you don't have to. You can slow it down with Nugenix Total T. It boosts free and total testosterone. It helps you get the old fire back at work, in the gym, and in the bedroom. Nugenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Tesner. It'll help you turn back the clock and re-energize your life and prove it to yourself. Try Nugenix Total T before you buy. There is nothing to lose. Get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy. Text now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, the newest and most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you lose fat and get lean fast. It is absolutely free. Your complimentary bottle awaits. Text 231-231 and enter keyword Jimmy. Text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy.
Texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates apply. Number one doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent survey conducted by IQVIA 2022.
Oh, girl. It is Fox Across America with your main man, Jimmy Failla. Got a lot going on today. Kennedy's going to be on the show, host of Kennedy on the Fox Business Network, the human highlight reel. The woman who gave me my start in cable news. You could blame her. That is correct. We're also going to talk to Montana Senator Steve Daines about some, I got to be honest, some shaky analysis from your energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm. I'm not happy, but she was out there pushing green energy yesterday and basically saying, well, you know, this Ukraine situation is why we need to move closer to green energy and blah, blah, you know.
Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Basically, we'll get there. But right now, most of the leg peeing being done by John Kirby, who was on America's Newsroom a short while ago talking to Bill Hemmer. Here it is, clip 13.
You're saying that he may have been in Kabul as long as last year?
Well, late last year. We think maybe as late as December. I don't mean a whole year ago. Probably, you know, over the last 6-7 months. But we had to, that was an indication that we had. We had to verify that. And that was from a long, painstaking, meticulous effort in the intelligence community to verify and validate the information we thought we had. And that took months to do, to make sure that, well, the indications were accurate, that it really was him and he really was there, and then watch his pattern of life, see if we could really make sure that we had the right guy and that we had an opportunity through his pattern of life to maybe take this strike. It took a while, but really just several months.
So essentially what he is saying, though, okay, They figured out where the guy was probably back in December, tracked him, ultimately killed him. Again, that is a good thing. So don't, this is not me getting mad at the Biden administration. What I'm trying to point out is the reason ABC, the reason NBC is also asking this question is because this detailed timeline contradicts what the White House told us about al-Qaeda not being in Afghanistan. And it contradicts the deal we made with the Taliban in agreeing to leave, that they wouldn't be harboring any type of terror activity, which in fact has turned out to be the case that they were. So good that the terrorist is bad and dead for being bad. Bad that we have a couple of people who can't get their story straight in the White House.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Don't we all?
Really do appreciate the fact I got some beers. This show is so freaking dumb that my face is bored to tears. 'Cause Whoopi is a moron and Joy is stupid too. Honey, why don't we turn off the view? Why don't we turn off the view? It's so bad it hurts my head, and none of this crap is true. They say dumb things and they scream, honey, this ain't good.
It is Fox Across America, and if ever there was a time to reach for the TV remote, it is when The View comes on.
The View is awful.
Listen, we give this show a lot of hay, mainly because it's ridiculous, but also because it carries a lot of weight on the left. The View is one of the most watched outlets amongst female voters in the Democratic Party. It's up there with anything else in the media. The View has two key demographics. It has white liberal women and Guantanamo Bay inmates who can't be waterboarded anymore, so they put on Whoopi Goldberg speeches instead.
No!
Like, bring back the water! Come on, I can't watch another stupid comment! Don't ever forget, I can never bring up The View without highlighting just the self-righteous stupidity that permeates this show. Whoopi Goldberg, and I say this all the time, she's one of the dumbest people on TV, okay? But what they do is they're very opinionated, and the audience applauds, but they never know what they're talking about. But there's so much self-righteousness, and all the other, you know, gassy middle-aged women in the audience are like, yeah! Uh-huh, yeah! Listen to the applause break that starts here when Whoopi Goldberg suggests that Jill Biden should be your Surgeon General. Except there's one small problem. Jill Biden is not an actual medical doctor. But again, listen to the crowd get going, because they just applaud anything like trained seals.
Dr. Jill becomes a Surgeon General. His wife.
Yeah.
The crowd? Jill Biden's wife, because she's, you know, she would never do it. But she, yeah, she's a hell of a doctor. She's an amazing doctor.
I thought she was a doctor in
PhD. Yeah.
I
could be wrong.
I thought she was. Yeah, I think she's a teacher, but.
Oh, my mistake.
Jill Biden should be the Surgeon General because she's an excellent doctor.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
These are some of the stupidest people on TV. And I bring this up, why? Because they affect our political discourse by having the platform that they do. Okay, my whole goal, I say this every day, when Fox gave me a show, okay, they say, hey, you're going to do a radio show. Everybody who wanted turned it down, or they wanted too much money, whatever it is, we'll give you a shot. And that's fine. I have no ego. I don't say that as like, ha-ha. Dude, the joke ain't on me. I was driving a taxi. Now I'm talking to a few million people on the radio. I am thrilled. Let's be very clear. Okay, I'm just mocking myself. But the point is, when Fox gave me a show, I really spent so much time thinking about the effect I was going to have on the people consuming this product. Because I spent as much time as I did driving around in a taxi, having my own mood shaped by what was coming out of the speakers, I realized the power of this medium to impact your life if it is a regimented part of your day, whether it's your work day, your commute. That's why one of my favorite things in the world is to hear somebody say like, oh, you make the work day go faster. I like listening to your show. That's my favorite thing in the world because that's what radio did for me. So I always wanted to be something good that you looked forward to. But bigger than that, I just wanted to be responsible. And I really thought like, how am I going to have the most positive impact? How can I be a force multiplier of positive energy as a broadcaster? And that was always the goal. Yeah, we'll tell jokes because that's where my background is. We'll write song parodies. That's where my background is. We'll do sketches. That's the background. But bigger than that is I'm just trying to lower the temperature and get everybody to just seriously calm the f- down. That's all I'm trying to do. All I'm ever trying to do, because you can get to a place of reason. You can get to a place of coexistence. Oh, I don't know, maybe even make a little progress on behalf of the country if people are reasonable. But if you get on the air and just sell nonstop self-righteousness, the other side sucks, I'm the man, how dare you disagree with me, you're banned from calling in, you don't help anything. You're not preaching to a choir, you're yelling at them. Okay, The View, for all intents and purposes, is just yelling at a choir. Okay, and they don't know what they're talking about. I bring this up because, again, when you sell division for a living, when you're catering to applause breaks from stupid people who don't know any better, okay, you're willing to get on TV and say things like the clip I'm about to play you from The View, which is that this is mind-blowingly stupid, even by the standards of The View, but I have to share it with you, okay, because the thing is, the people listening to this, okay, the watch her, this show, okay, it's, you know, a few million people some days, okay, and they take stuff like this home as gospel, and they do believe, listen, what they were saying on The View, that matters, okay, but understand, if it's not true, if it's not accurate, okay, you got a real big problem in terms of our ability to have an honest conversation. So here's Whoopi Goldberg, the woman who told you that Jill Biden would make an excellent Surgeon General, despite the fact that she's not an actual doctor.
Can you imagine being that stupid?
No, but it gets stupider, even though that's not a real word. Here's clip 14.
A Democratic president did this, not a Republican. Mm-hmm. Just like a Democratic president took out Osama bin Laden. A Democratic president got us out of Afghanistan and is standing up to Russia by supporting Ukraine instead of withholding aid. This is what a president is supposed to do. Nobody knew anything about it except the people who needed to know.
Yeah.
And that's how this is supposed to work.
You're so dumb. You are really dumb. For real.
So what she's trying to tell you is, you know, Democratic president killed this guy. Democratic president got bin Laden. Meaning, you know, well, the Republicans, they don't kill terrorists.
That is a fact check false.
Yo, the Republicans, if you remember, under the last president, killed Qasem Soleimani, who was the veritable figurehead for the whole terror operation in the Middle East. He was the godfather of the whole thing. And if you remember when he did so, when Donald Trump killed Soleimani, okay, he was booed the following day at a Washington Nationals game.
What the hell is the world coming to?
When Trump killed Soleimani, he was booed in Washington. They're like, how dare you, Soleimani, if you remember. Okay, the New York Times called him an austere scholar. This is a good guy, just minded his own business. Trump went in and killed him. He's going to destabilize the region. Okay, again, this, I'm sorry, Mikey. Yeah, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. I'm confusing my terrorist names. Qasem Soleimani, another guy who had to go. But Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, which, by the way, my Middle East pronunciations, because of all the time I spent driving a cab, are pretty all right. I mean, I knew guys. You've heard me tell this joke before. I knew three guys named Osama bin Laden. So the first time I got that call, it was a Sunday night when we killed bin Laden. They were like, they got bin Laden. I was like, for what? Speeding? I mean, come on.
That was the worst thing I ever heard.
But the point is, okay, Republicans launched the war on terror. Republicans are the reason we were into Afghanistan. In fact, they were so excited to fight terror, they even went to Iran, and we shouldn't have, if you want to be technical. But this idea that, you know, they're not out there killing terrorists, it's a Democrat. You know, only Democrats do it. Democrats giving the aid to Ukraine. Yo, Democrats are the reason Russia is in Ukraine. Why? Because if you remember in the run-up, we were told, well, we've got these severe sanctions, and the sanctions are going to stop this thing dead in its tracks. And once these sanctions happen, and everyone kept saying, well, hey, if the sanctions are going to stop an invasion, why not deploy the sanctions now before there is an invasion? And they're like, no, no, you don't understand. They're that bad. They don't want to mess with these sanctions. Anyway, since the sanctions went into place, the Russian ruble is now worth 8 times as much as the American dollar. And Putin isn't showing any signs of slowing down, although we have spent close to $50 billion in Ukraine. So every celebrity can fly over there and do a photo op with the Zelenskys. OK, they've become the new Coachella. You go meet the Zelenskys, you wind up on the cover of Vanity Fair. I mean, really think about that. It's crazy. Guy speaks to Congress. He speaks at the Emmys. And I got nothing against the guy. But the point is, OK, when it comes to foreign policy, it's not enough ever to just have a moment of agreement. Like, I opened my show yesterday saying, hey, this is great. Biden killed a terrorist. OK, Joe Biden announced to the entire country that we had killed, OK, a terrorist.
I don't remember that ever happening.
But it did. And it was a good thing. But rather than just saying, yeah, it's a good thing, we had to turn it into a moment of division because that's what they do on The View. Yeah, Joe Biden killed a terrorist. You don't see Republicans killing the terrorist. They wouldn't want to kill a terrorist. Am I right, guys? White supremacy. Trump. Something. I don't know. It's crazy. But this is the problem I have. The reason I highlight The View a lot is they're doing something toxic. And on a show like this, which really, I mean, honestly, I have no goal for this show other than try to stay employed against all odds because I'm not really bringing a lot to the table. But I'm desperately trying to be a force multiplier of positivity, of positive energy. Positive energy attracts positive outcomes. People being in a good mood leads to rational debate and discourse. It leads to a substantive engagement on the issues instead of anybody who disagrees with me is Hitler, which is a lot of what we have now in our politics. Oh, you don't like what I'm doing? You're a white supremacist. No, no, that's not what this is about. It's nothing to do with race. We're not talking about race. But that's what a lot of our politics have become. And I make this point a lot because, yeah, this is a new show. It's a happening show. It's on a lot of new stations, which means there's a lot of radio people that listen to this show. And I'm trying to communicate with them and remind them that, yes, you can do this all over your station and retain a massive audience because at our core, humans are positive beings. We want to have a good time. We don't need to come on the air and lie and create division for political gain. But sadly, that's a lot of what broadcasting has become. Like when you listen to The View yesterday, understand that is demonstrably false. That the GOP doesn't want to kill terror. Like, what are you talking about? In what world are we running around being like, let them be? Okay, again, the GOP did not hand Afghanistan to a terror group. The GOP did not leave $85 billion worth of weapons in the hands of that terror group.
That can't be good.
But who did leave that money in this terror group? It was the Democrats. So if you were going to go through the trouble of having this conversation, Whoopi Goldberg, you might want to point that out, too, is all I'm trying to say.
And I'm out here in the real world, and I know what's right or wrong or bullshit.
You're hanging out with Jimmy Failla on Fox Across America.
It is Fox Across America. Your main man, Jimmy Failla. Fired up. It's Wednesday. A lot going on in the world of cable news. We're going to be talking to Kennedy in the next break. I am scheduled to be on her show tomorrow night, Thursday night. Tonight, I am scheduled to unveil a package I shot for the great Tucker Carlson, which features me in New York City. Getting to the bottom of one of the most confounding mysteries in Democratic cities. I can't go any further than that, but I can tell you there is something unique about every Democratic-run city in this country right now as it pertains to the decline in the quality of life. And this is not me taking a time out to bash Democrat cities. What I'm going to bash in this moment is single-party rule, okay? It is not good for you, no matter where you live, to have one party in power for 50 years. Why? Because if they know that your vote is guaranteed, they don't go out and work very hard on your behalf.
I agree with that.
That's the problem with one party rule. Like when you hear things like, you know, remember when they were torching the near north of Minneapolis in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing? And the response was what? Well, to quote Martin Luther King, a riot is the language of the unheard. And it is. But no one ever stopped to ask why none of these people felt heard in cities that had been run by Democrats for the past 100 years.
Oh, wow.
You think about that. They're like, they're rioting in Minneapolis. They're rioting in Milwaukee. They're rioting in Detroit. They're rioting in Chicago. They're rioting in Los Angeles. They're rioting in New York. This is the language of the unheard. You riot when you don't feel heard. Okay, fine. But who's not listening? The Democrats. Politicians as a whole, though, this is not unique to the Democrats. Just understand this. Politicians as a whole, they like running on issues. They don't necessarily like solving them. Yes, I agree that conservative principles are wholeheartedly better for our country than anything that they're pushing right now on the woke left.
Everything woke turns to shit.
But the fact remains a lot of politicians are members of the Uniparty. Okay, 80% of what's in Washington, D.C. is a go-along to get along, make me some lobbyist dough, get a couple of hot stock tips, go out to a couple of fancy lunches, do some photo ops, and I'm out of here. That's most of Washington. The biggest resentment against Donald Trump is not that he used foul language in his tweets. It's that he actually showed up in Washington and tried to work. Okay, most of the people in Washington are that employee that's figured out just the bare minimum they have to do to hold on to their job. You know, we've all worked at a job where there's like this general malaise, nobody does anything. Then the new guy shows up and is going hard and everybody's like, yo, dude, what are you turning that in on a Tuesday for? We could have milked the whole week, turned this in on a Friday and did nothing. You know, and that's a lot of businesses, but none bigger than politics. Politics is the ultimate do-nothing job. You know, it's Hollywood, but it's Hollywood, Florida. You know, it's not Hollywood, California. It's not as glamorous per se, but they don't do anything. And when you have one party running your state for 50 years and they know you're just going to vote because that's how you roll, you ultimately wind up voting against your self-interest. That's why you do need to shake up the cage from time to time. That's where Trump was of value to this country in that regard. But in the next hour, we're not talking about Trump 2024. I'm telling you with a straight face, someone wrote a piece about AOC.
Live from everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Oh, yes, it sure is. We're getting ready for a big hour of Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla, a man who is not running for president in 2024. AOC, of all people, Mike.
AOC is a dope.
A lot of people feel that way, but apparently one man has been paid a handsome sum of money to write an op-ed in The Hill demanding that the Democrats nominate AOC.
That's stupid.
Use your common sense.
We're going to discuss it in this hour with Kennedy, host of Kennedy on the Fox Business Network, because I am so fascinated when you talk about the level of shameless propaganda I am about to read you by a man I happen to know quite well. Okay, let's just dive right in and do this. Let's have some you and me time. We don't need any card tricks. I don't need to make any balloon animals. You know, we do a lot of fancy stuff at the top of the hour on this show. You know, it's a lot of pyrotechnics, a lot of bells and whistles. You know, it's Fox Across America. Part of the hook is I don't know what I'm doing. So we come on the air, we bamboozle you. You're like, oh, look at that. Jimmy told the joke. Look, there's this kid saying something silly. And then we get into the politics. But in this instance, again, it's very much an MTV Unplugged today. Sometimes we just got to talk about it. And this is worth talking about. Man, oh boy, oh man. So Michael Starr Hopkins, I need you to know who he is. He's a panelist. He's been on this channel quite a bit over the years. He works for political campaigns from time to time and goes off the grid. I've done a fair amount of Kennedy with him. He's been on this radio show, probably dating back about 2 years. When last I ran into him, he was working on a campaign for a guy who ran for the nomination in 2020 by the name of John Delaney. But do you remember him? He was like a billionaire and he ran and he was in the Democratic primaries for about a half hour. Okay, as early dropouts go, he was like a 9. On a scale of 1 to Kamala.
Kamala's awful with her weird laugh.
Ha-ha!
But he might have lasted a day longer than she did, or a day shorter, I don't remember. But he wasn't in the race very long. But anyway, Michael Starr Hopkins is a man of character, someone I happen to know to be funny. I always loved this guy in the green room. I've always gotten along fabulously with him when we were on a TV show together. So do not think I'm besmirching this man on any level. I have actually texted him because I want him to comment on this story he wrote, because I can only imagine that what I'm about to read you was written at gunpoint, either at gunpoint or written for a handsome sum of money, because this piece in The Hill is written like a North Korean press release. You know, when they say like Kim Jong-un's heart beats with the heat of 1,000 suns and he ran a marathon backwards in record time and, you know, stuff like that. He's a gravitational pull. He shot 17 holes in one, runs a 2-minute mile, that whole thing. OK, this is straight propaganda. None of it's true. And I am just taken back that this was even published, let alone written with a straight face, or I don't know, somebody, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I'd like to get you an answer. I don't have one, but I am out to the author of this piece for some type of clarification, because I could only assume when I read this, I checked the date 3 times to make sure it wasn't April Fool's, but apparently it wasn't. Okay, here it is. Okay, and I'm just going to read you this. This is an editorial titled AOC is the Democrats' best shot against Trump in 2024.
Wrong.
Now, again, this already begins with the premise that it's, you know, only if they're running against Trump and Trump's going to be the nominee. I still don't know that Trump's going to run. I know it looks that way. I know he's making a lot of noise, but I think there is a part of him that likes playing golf and being the kingmaker, just endorsing people, seeing them win, getting, you know, the right to say, I told you so to everybody who elected Biden. Because here's the one thing about Trump really quick. Right now, he's in a last laugh scenario. He is. You know, you could say he lost the 2020 election and Biden got one. Okay, but there's two things that matter. One, Trump got one. Okay, he walked in off the street as a member of the private sector and won the presidency. It had never been done before. Entire genres of Hollywood films were made about this very thing happening. He turned the fantasy into a reality. That is the biggest FU in the world to the political establishment, is that he got one. Now, you can say, well, but they beat him in 2020. They used all the media. They used all the big tech. You know, they reconfigured all the state voting laws, worked around the legislatures and the constitutions, did all the ballot harvesting and the drop boxes and everything in between. It looked like there was a lot of chicanery, but at the end of the day, we can't prove anything. He lost. Okay. Bottom line is, yes, his electoral record is 1-1, but he's in a last laugh scenario from the standpoint of the guy they replaced him with is the worst president in the history of this country.
I agree with that.
Like, Joe Biden is not governing like our 46th president. He's governing like he's our last president. And not only is he governing like a moron, but he's surrounded by people who have no idea what they're doing.
I'm Kamala Harris, and I approve this message.
But that being said, you know, if you're Trump, you can always say, I told you so. He can go down in history as, you know, a king in his own party and be able to say, yeah, all right, you guys railroaded me out of a second term, but look what you got in return. The joke ain't on me. The joke's on America. And I think that's an irrefutable truth. Regardless of what you think of the character of Donald Trump, he didn't lose the 2020 election. America did. OK, America didn't have record level of inflation when he left office. They didn't have record level gas prices, record level fentanyl overdose deaths, record level border crossings, record spikes in crime. OK, that happened under Biden. OK, we're all worse off as a result of this administration. But that being said, no serious human being thinks Joe Biden is running in 2024. Nobody. OK, so you're starting to hear the talk about Gavin Newsom. You're starting to hear whispers of maybe Hillary Clinton's got more energy to run again.
I don't feel no ways tired.
Okay, you're starting to hear the rumblings of anybody but Biden. When David Axelrod, Barack Obama's chief strategist, said somebody besides Biden should run in 2024, that is very much Barack Obama saying somebody besides Biden should run in 2024.
Tell him like it is.
Okay, so here's Michael Starr Hopkins in what I can only assume is paid work for AOC, writing the following. When Barack Obama came out of nowhere to win a Senate seat in 2004, it almost felt preordained, as if he was the person we had been waiting for to breathe fresh air into the Democratic Party. Flash forward to 2018, and the meteoric rise of a 29-year-old bartender from Queens feels eerily familiar. She has been unafraid, unapologetic, and unwilling to bend the will of Washington. She is a force to be reckoned with, and in 2024, Democrats are going to need her force to reckon with Republicans.
Have you ever had a checkup?
Okay, first of all, this 29-year-old bartender from Queens isn't from Queens. She's using her relative's address. She grew up in one of the wealthiest suburbs of Manhattan, do you understand? And was the child of what the Democrats like to demean as privilege, okay? AOC grew up around a lot of money in the suburbs, in the cushy, sweet suburbs. And I'm not disparaging that experience. I grew up in a middle-class suburb. It was fabulous. But yes, they've tried to repurpose her as this gritty street girl like she's Jenny from the block. Here's the next paragraph. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is less of a personality and more of a movement, he says with a straight face. Yes, the smart, photogenic congresswoman is the face of the rising progressive movement, but she is also the future of the Democratic Party. She's less of a personality and more of a movement. Yo, I mean, technically speaking, yes, her persona is a bowel movement. Okay, but has she authored a single solitary piece of past legislation?
The answer would be no.
Is she co-signed any single productive measure for her district?
The answer would be no.
So far, her biggest contribution to her district is killing an Amazon deal that would have created a few hundred thousand jobs that paid over $100,000 a year. But she gets out there every day and says, I'm fighting for the little guy.
She is a fraud, a phony, a woman without a moral core, a regular two-faced, mealy-mouthed politician who swings with the wind.
Let me read you this. If Senator Bernie Sanders is the godfather, then Ocasio-Cortez is Michael Corleone.
You don't have a clue.
Yo. He says AOC is Michael Corleone. Oh, my goodness. AOC wields a superpower that is rarely found in Washington. Her 2018 victory wasn't just historic. It was shocking and felt predestined, much like when we first saw a brilliant speaker with a funny name and big ears remind us that through hope and change, we could put our country on a new course. He says, so he's telling you she's Barack Obama, AOC. Yo, AOC didn't even flip her district. She won in a district that is 99.9% Democrat. There was nothing historic about it. Nothing. Not her gender, not her race, not her party affiliation. They have sold her as upheaval, but it's the most status quo thing in the world. Okay? It's the stupidest thing. This would be like me walking in and being like, well, they've never had breadsticks at the Olive Garden before, but then I showed up. You're like, wait, what? We had breadsticks every day. And I'm not reducing her to breadsticks. People enjoy breadsticks. okay? But stick with me. AOC has the ability to tell the story of her generation. She's Barack Obama. If Barack Obama was an actual progressive.
Don't be thick, all right?
And he writes, I love Obama, but he was a moderate who sounded like a progressive. Now, Michael Starr Hopkins is sober for that line, because the truth is, if Barack Obama ran today in the modern Democratic Party, he would be considered a Proud Boy. He'd be like a right-wing strongman to the Democrats. He had a motto of, yes, we can. That's what he said. Yes, we can. Now the Democrats are telling you, no, we can't at every turn. No, no, no. Society systemically biased. Eat the rich. They're out to get you. You need the government's help. You can't do this on your own. Who is this half white guy saying, yes, we can?
Get him out of here. Get him out.
That's what they said. But understand, here's more Michael Starr Hopkins. This is my favorite thing in the world. It would have been easy for her to walk into Congress and hire nothing but communication staff. It would have been easy for her to sell out and do the cash grab. She could have publicly made Nancy Pelosi and Charles Schumer's lives a living hell just to show off to her supporters. Instead, she did her homework and tried to fly under the radar while learning the nuances of Congress and the levers of powers that run it. Oh, my goodness gracious. That is not true.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
The AOC did not try to fly under the radar. She's been cooking macaroni and cheese on Instagram every night since she got into office. She has been trolling for likes and picking every BS culture war on the planet, AOC. But again, this guy who is, I know Michael Starr Hopkins. I like this guy. I want him to call into the show right now. I have texted him demanding comment. Okay, he must be paid for this, and he must be paid an exorbitant amount of money. And if that's not the case, I urge whoever knows this man to take his car keys immediately. There is no world where AOC did her homework and tried to fly under the radar. Are you kidding me? It's like, yeah, Liberace didn't try to draw attention to his wardrobe. He just wanted his performances to speak for itself. I mean, are you crazy?
I've lost my marbles.
I feel like you have. Okay, but Michael Starr Hopkins goes on to say the congresswoman holds no punches when it comes to Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Echoing my previous calls for Sinema to face a primary challenge, AOC publicly declared she should be primaried and said this of Manchin: this idea that one person gets to go on television and provide weak arguments as to why they're blocking the basic civil rights of our Americans and journalists don't push back, and our party leadership doesn't push back, and the president doesn't push back forcefully, that makes me mad. That was AOC. You know, like the time she flew down to Guantanamo Bay when Trump was, quote, putting kids in cages. Now understand that those cages were built under who? They were built under Barack Obama.
I don't see you doing any better in the booty department.
But never forget when the New York Times tried to make an uproar and they said, oh, kids in cages. Look at Trump putting these kids in cages. And they ran a photo. And then what happened? The Associated Press called them out and said, yo, New York Times, that photo is actually from 2014 under Obama.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
But AOC still flew down to Guantanamo Bay in an all-white pantsuit and took photos of herself crying in front of the cages because she was so distraught over the idea that families were being separated at the border. Never mind that they were being separated. Why? Because most people coming across the border seeking asylum aren't with their actual children. They're just trying to get into the country by using a child, which gives them an exponentially higher chance of getting their asylum case granted. Family separation began under Bush. You call it family separation, but they're not separating families. They're trying to ascertain that the person is with someone who's an actual member of their family. And once they do that, they either reunite them. But if they're with someone they shouldn't be with, then they're not with the person anymore. But the long story short is when you tell me that AOC is this champion of inequality, okay, the border numbers right now are literally 10 times higher under Joe Biden than they were under Donald Trump. Is AOC going down to Guantanamo Bay?
The answer would be no.
No, it's because she's a fraud and a dope, and so is anyone who believes this op-ed.
It's the show that never hits the books.
I love the poorly educated.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Watch the band, the airplanes, down with gas.
gas station's low. Her Green New Deal really blows. Her knowledge is a fountain, the driest fountain. So dumb, and everybody knows. AOC. Whoa. AOC. That dumb woman, though, she's all over TV. AOC. AOC. That dumb woman, she's wrecking the country. AOC. Whoa, AOC. That dumb woman, though, she's running her party. Dumb woman, she's wrecking the country.
My word. One more quote from AOC. We're going to be discussing this with Kennedy in a little while. It's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla. If you're just joining us, I've been taking us through an op-ed written by Michael Starr Hopkins, someone I know personally that I need to get in touch with and make sure he hasn't gone off his medication or he's not being held at gunpoint. Here's another line from this op-ed suggesting AOC should run in 2024. America doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the generations that will come after us. It is our obligation in the face of fascism to put up a candidate who isn't just different than the Republicans, but is disgusted by Republicans and prepared to say why. There will never be another Barack Obama, but I have a feeling we'll be saying the same about AOC. When opportunity meets preparation and history creates the moment, the cream of the crop always rises, leaving everyone else behind. Democrats want a fighter, not a politician. They want someone who punches back and isn't afraid to say why.
Don't you have any respect for yourself?
This guy. Oh, my God. Listen, I would donate to AOC's campaign if she ran just to have fun. But, oh, my goodness, she couldn't run a 5K, let alone a country. AOC is one of the dumbest people to ever hold elected office. Yes, she has mastered the idiocracy we live in, which is attention equals, you know, progress. You have influence on Capitol Hill, even if you don't know what you're doing. But it doesn't actually mean it helps the country. And if you exposed her stupidity to the rest of the country for a full 6-month campaign, you'd probably have a 3-day campaign, because she is one of the dumbest people that have ever stepped into Washington.
That is correct.
It is Fox Across America with your main man, Jimmy Failla, getting ready to talk to Kennedy, host of Kennedy on the Fox Business Network, about this claim that AOC should be our next president. I mean, come on. Just madness. Okay, I love it. I read it. I tried to hold it together. Okay, but there is no world where AOC could run this country. I mean, could the Democrats nominate her? Yes, because she checks boxes. She's a woman. She is a minority, so they can just say anyone who doesn't agree with her is a misogynist or a racist. But I think what happened with the Biden administration is I think they actually killed identity politics. Like, if you've noticed, who has the biggest growth with minority voters right now? It's Republicans, okay? Democrats are down double digits with black voters. They're down 40 points with Latino voters, okay? And one of the reasons why is because people don't want – they don't want boxes checked. They want paychecks. You know what I'm saying? They just want to make a couple of bucks. You know, star power is great if you're just so cool and so badass. You can walk into my radio studio mid-discussion, just sit down and take over the broadcast. But it doesn't work for politicians is what I'm trying to say. Joining me now in studio, woman who just – she needs no entry. In fact, she just made an entry right past the bouncer, shoved them out of the way.
Yeah, that was a – oh, hi,
host
Jim.
Of Kennedy on
Jim.
The Fox Business Network. Is my mic on? Kennedy's here, everybody. Yay.
Yay.
Good to see
everybody
you.
In the world.
People are excited. Aviator Nation, Venice, California. That's the hat?
Absolutely right.
There are a lot of nations in Venice, California these days, by the way. Kennedy just walked in with a dope pink hat.
It's bright pink. So my mom can find me.
when she wanders off at the theme park.
Yeah.
Have anyone seen they put a hat on her.
Has anyone seen me?
I love that you blamed it on your mom and not Fox as a whole, because they probably have you in a hat. Can you wander around with your baseball mitt on and everything?
I took my mitt to the game Friday night.
Did you, though?
Because
Guy Benson, you went with Guy Benson.
I sure did.
And he wouldn't stop you.
He actually encouraged it. He said, shame on him. I said, every time I take a mitt to a game, Jimmy accuses me of being touched. And he said, I think it's a really smart idea to take a mitt to every single game.
what people don't understand is you're wearing the mitt to other things now. she goes over to Fresh & Co. and gets a burrito with a mitt on. And I'm like, people are talking.
You know, my work is my play, and I'm playing when I work. So I got to be ready. If they call me up, I have to be ready, Jim.
Kennedy is in studio. She is the Uncle Rico of cable news. Coach should have put you in.
I think that's a big compliment.
She can throw
actually an upgrade. I'll take it.
I mean, Uncle,
that means at some point I was successful.
Yes. For all of his faults, Uncle Rico was one of the most effective Tupperware salesmen of his time.
Yes.
No one ever talks about that.
No.
They mock him for saying he would have been a state champion in football. I would posit that if he was as effective on the gridiron as he was selling Tupperware, they might have been state champs.
He might be Joe Montana.
That's the joke of the whole thing. We all dump on Uncle Rico, but you're right. He might have been Uncle Joe Montana is what he might have been. Let's talk about this. We both know Michael Starr Hopkins. He's been on your show. He's been on my show. He's pleasant. We get on with him fine. Okay, he wrote an op-ed saying AOC is the Democrats' best shot against Trump in 2024. Who cares? The reason I want to talk about it is because do you think, okay, we don't know his motivation here, but it almost reads like he was either paid a handsome amount of money or he's writing this at gunpoint. We don't have confirmation on either of those things. I've actually texted him for clarification. These are fascinating lines. Did you read this yet, or am I reading this to you for the first time?
I did not read it.
Oh, no. You're going to love this. You have no idea.
I know about it.
Okay.
I know of its existence, but... Oftentimes, I don't waste my time reading stuff from blatant attention seekers who are wholly unserious about their subjects.
Well, there you go.
I find that to be a massive waste of time.
And I think you're well within your rights to issue that declaration in this instance. Here we go. I'm just going to read you some lines, okay? I can't. This is so hard. Okay. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is less of a personality and more of a movement. Yes, the smart, photogenic congresswoman is the face of the rising progressive movement, but she's also the future of the party. When Barack Obama came out of nowhere to win a Senate seat in 2004, it almost felt preordained, as if he was the person we'd been waiting for to breathe fresh air into the party. Flash forward to 2018, and the meteoric rise of a 29-year-old bartender from Queens feels eerily similar. That already, to me, sounds a little North Korean-y, no?
It's so gross.
I know!
And she, if she were ever... subjected to a serious interview, she would melt like a sugar cube in whiskey.
Correcto mundo.
If Senator Bernie Sanders is the godfather, Ocasio-Cortez is Michael Corleone.
No, she's, she's actually Fredo. Like, she's not even Sonny.
She's not even Fredo. Are you ready for this? This is so good. Okay. It would have been easy for her to walk into Congress and hire nothing but communication staff. Would have been easy for her to sell out and do the cash grab. Instead, she did her homework and tried to fly under the radar while learning the nuances of Congress and the levers of power that run it.
The most ineffective person in Congress literally has done less in terms of her actual job, not social media. Social media is not real life. Social media is also not legislating. Seeking attention by dropping socialistic bombs, not legislating.
Nothing. She's
so, but she doesn't. She's so, like Michael Starr Hopkins, completely unserious about what she does.
You speak about unserious. So here's the point. The last time we saw Michael Starr Hopkins, he was actually shilling for John Delaney. Do you remember that?
Yes, who owes me $10,000.
They had a $10,000 bet about Delaney. Was it him winning the presidency?
Yes. I said, I'll bet you $10,000 you will not win the presidency. And he said, fine, you have to give me $100,000
if I do.
I said, I'll give you $100 million.
And this happened on the air.
Yes.
We have confirmation.
And he has never made good on that bet.
Oh, this is
insane. So John Delaney, who was Michael Starr Hopkins' client, is a welter. I don't know what that says about Michael Starr Hopkins.
I think Hopkins owes you the 10 grand.
Well, he was never able to make good on the bet. He just went, whoa, yeah, that's outrageous.
But again, trying to fly under the radar, I'm like, this. She has been cooking mac and cheese on Instagram every night for 4 years.
This is my Instapot.
She's a female Beto O'Rourke.
She really is. Let me give you more. AOC wields a superpower that is rarely found in Washington. Her 2018 victory wasn't just historic, it was shocking. It felt predestined, much like when we saw a brilliant speaker with a funny name and big ears remind us that through hope and change, we could put our country
Don't
in a new
talk about Dan Quayle that way. He is a handsome Hoosier, and he deserves our respect. And Kamala Harris has just reinforced what a wonderful Vice President J. Danforth Quayle III actually was.
Now, everyone listening needs to know that Dan Quayle does have a restraining order against Kennedy, a young Kennedy.
You know what the great thing? Like, every time we get a new booker on the show, I go up to them and go, hey, can we get Dan Quayle on the show? And they go, yeah, that sounds great. And then they run up against my emotional red tape that the Quayles have conveniently thrown up to insulate the former wonderful, telegenic, incomparable vice president.
Oh, man. We're talking to Kennedy. I'm laughing. One more, because I had to read this. You have to hear this. It's just so wonderful. America doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the generations that will come after us. It is our obligation.
No, it belongs to us. We pay taxes. that is false on its face.
Listen, so good. It is our obligation in the face of fascism to put up a candidate who isn't just different than Republicans, but is disgusted by Republicans and prepared to say why.
Nope, he doesn't show why Republicans are fascist. That is also a false statement.
Thank you. So here's the closer, and it's so good. There will never be another Barack Obama, but I have a feeling we'll be saying the same about AOC. When opportunity meets preparation and history creates the moment, the cream of the crop always rises, leaving everyone else behind. Democrats want a fighter, not a politician. They want someone who punches back.
What's the thing that sinks? That's AOC. That's her ideas. That's her legislative work ethic. It's not good.
No.
She has no record.
Nothing.
She has failed upward like Kamala Harris.
Is there any world where the author of this piece should be operating heavy machinery in the mental state he's in?
No. Clearly, like, he's chasing goofballs with Robitussin, allegedly. I mean, that's what one would say about the potential mental state of someone who writes such things, is they are unwell.
I'm very concerned about this. I've tried to reach out to this gentleman because that is not a healthy thing. That's either something written at gunpoint or, again, somebody who's in
or someone who's written it with their boner.
Yo, I think I got a shot with AOC if I write an op-ed. Yeah. Listen, I wanted you on today to talk about Dolyater's baseball. Dolyater's. I wanted to talk Vin Scully. I wanted to talk about your
Vin
show.
Vin Scully could have been a New Yorker.
You know, it's funny. So when his story is actually really wild. Like Red Barber, who's a longtime Dodgers announcer, had him call a football game at Fenway Park. He called a football game, sat on top of a fridge and called a football game. And Red Barber was like, wow, this kid's pretty sharp. And then when he went to broadcast for the Dodgers, he, oddly enough, at 25, was the youngest guy to ever call a Major League Baseball. A World Series game.
Wow.
Vin Scully. 67 years of Vin Scully. So the argument we were having earlier is, in terms of longevity and high-profile positions, it's basically him and the Queen, no?
Yeah, the queen obviously
more years
has outlasted Vin Scully.
He got 67 in, but Vin Scully,
you know, it's like, who would you want to party with more? I guess that's a question.
Well, here's the thing.
I'm still leaning toward the queen because I know she's a drinker.
Yeah, she's got hookups and she can make a lot of your problems disappear. That's part of the thing. I mean, listen, Prince Andrew had a good run before it finally caught up to him.
He had no choice.
But there's the thing. I mean, Vin Scully's contribution to baseball is, you know, undoubted. The queen actually tried to kill Reggie Jackson. Or vice versa. She almost got killed by Reggie Jackson.
She almost got killed by Reggie. So she doesn't have a great relationship with
baseball.
Yeah, with Major League Baseball at this point. So I don't think we should get her on the phone.
I don't think. Well, Mikey, just keep her on hold. Tell her we got a break right now. She's been calling. It's that time of day over there. It's nighttime. So she's swearing the heavy accent.
The Dubonnet and gin are mixing perfectly in her bloodstream.
I think Arthur's calling. I'm talking about intoxicated people. The last thing I got to throw at you, my man Paul Pelosi is getting sentenced today. out on the West Coast. He was.
Wouldn't it be great if they gave him like 14 years in prison?
Just because they know
county,
like, we're up against it. He's got to go to the county. Yeah. He's with like the guys NWA were hanging out with in between songs because they were actual gangbangers.
Yep.
You know, it's funny because I think back to MTV in the beginning of your MTV Raps when you were doing your thing and Fab Five Freddy was hustling around. I remember them going to Newark to do like a Naughty by Nature thing when Newark was like so hardcore that
as opposed to now, it's just a dreamland,
it's a vacation haven. I mean, I know.
Yeah, on the weekend, I'm like, let's drive somewhere, girls. Want to go to Newark? It's so pretty.
Oh, it's so funny. But I do think back to different times when, like, gangster rap was actually gangster. It was really gangster.
Well, now, yeah. I mean, I know I've told this story maybe on the show, but Dr. Dre in 1993 came out to the Beach House and Quag with an ankle bracelet on and a minder from prison.
I didn't
like
know
he
that.
Was on work release. Uh-huh. And he came out to give out a 64 Impala. That it was one of the most phenomenal things I've ever seen.
And he couldn't drive it more than a mile from his house, but
well,
for
no,
work
he
or
was a little tiny.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing! I did not know that Dr. Yeah. Dre. Now, would Dr. Dre have lived if you threw him in the pool like Tom York from Radiohead?
Oh yeah, and he also, you know, he's a doctor. He probably would have written me a prescription for some ailment. You know, it's like. I was probably gullible enough. I'm like, you know, Dr. Dre, I've got this tendonitis in my Achilles. What should I do? Should I drink gin and juice? Will that make it better?
It heals everything, yeah. I was told. Oh, man, we're talking to Kennedy, and I'm just laughing. The last one then, because I would like 14 years for Paul Pelosi, but I have a feeling he's getting like a half-hour community service. Mm-hmm. You would think with all the stock money he's made, he could get an Uber, no?
Oh, he could buy Uber.
So do you think on some level, right? Because it's a known thing that they've made a gazillion dollars. It doesn't look like it's on the up and up. I don't actually believe she's ever going to be like prosecuted or there's even a way to do so. But do you think maybe they will be the end of this thing? Meaning like the boomer
the country?
Generation. No, the boomer generation of Congress that really did get rich.
I don't know. Nancy's had a good week.
I know.
Nancy, you know, she's like the one older person in Washington, D.C. has actually done the right thing this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though she's super annoying when it comes to Democrats funding Republicans they find untoward.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think that's so disgusting. It's just a gross tactic that no one should engage in. But she's done things right this week, so she may say to the judge, you know, I want a little me time. I don't want to come home and find Paul.
That's true.
Passed out in the dog bed.
She's posted a lot of swimsuit photos lately. Is Nancy Pelosi
She's advertising.
Is she a thirst trap? Is Nancy Pelosi a congressional thirst trap?
Yeah, she's our congressional snack.
You know how we'll know? When Michael Starr Hopkins writes a Pelosi 2024 editorial next. That's how we'll know.
Yeah.
Watch Kennedy on Fox Business tonight and every night. It should be required, Billy. Of all the things for a government not to have mandated. You know what I mean? I think the next candidate in 2024 could score a lot of currency if they just mandated your show.
Yeah, where's Fauci on this?
Right.
You know, we can close the schools, but we can't force people out of an abundance of caution to watch my show in order to make their lives better.
He let down the American
people.
He really
has. Oh, Mr. Beagle Killer. Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Beagle Killer.
All right. She's getting wound up again, folks. You know the rule.
Get her out. Get her out of here.
We love you. We'll see you tonight on FBN.
Damn!
There she goes, the K-Train. We're back after this.
You're listening to the hottest show in the country.
Our country is in serious trouble.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla. Just wrapped up with Kennedy. Make sure you watch her tonight on the Fox Business Network at 7 p.m. She's the coolest. But she really, I've been covering AOC for an hour, which I don't mean to do. The American people have been through enough in the past 6 months, in the past year and a half, without having to spend an hour hearing about AOC. But, you know, bottom line, I think we've summarized this op-ed of AOC being the Democrats' best shot in 2024. I think Michael Starr Hopkins, who has not returned to my text messages, was writing this bit in a state of arousal. there's no other way. There's just no other way to take any of this at face value. He calls AOC. If Bernie Sanders is the godfather, AOC is Michael Corleone.
That was embarrassing.
Oh, man, this is a tough one. I think Kennedy summed it up. I can't say these things. I try to, you know, I try to have the, you know, a minimal amount of decorum on this show, but I don't take positions on women or their looks or anything in between. But if women do, I, you know, I might co-sign them. But Kennedy basically said Michael Starr Hopkins wants to sleep with AOC. And that really might be the only way to justify writing what he wrote. It's either that or she just paid him a ton of money to write this, because this is the most absurd thing in the world. We don't ever give homework on this show because, I mean, if you've listened to the show, I'm clearly not the guy who did homework in school. But this is an op-ed in The Hill that's worth you reading it. It's entirely. And it's just about how great AOC is. And again, the money quote at the end, when opportunity meets preparation and history creates the moment, the cream of the crop always rises.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I mean, if he didn't at least throw up in his mouth a little bit when he typed that out, I don't know how to help this fella. But AOC, of all people, I mean, man, like, we're going to get back to talking substance in the next hour. We're not going to do any more of this carnival barking. But man, oh boy, oh man, what you need to know about this country, I don't care if you're Republican. I don't care if you're Democrat. That's not what this show is. I'm not an activist. I'm a talk show host. But AOC is actually every single thing that's wrong with this country. You could say, oh, Trump's big on social media, but Trump actually governed and did things and made changes to the country and shook up Washington. The only thing AOC has shaken up is the spaghetti strainer when she's throwing it back into the pot to add the cheese in her mac and cheese recipe. Outside of that, she has absolutely nothing to offer.
Tell it like it is.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Oh, girl. Coming to you live from the greatest country in the world broadcasting, as we always do from the tippy top of the world famous Fox News headquarters in New York City. It is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla, fired up in this hour. We're going to be talking to Montana Senator Steve Daines. Why? Because he represents a state that is rich in both fossil fuels and renewable resources, which is something that's worth mentioning at a time when your energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, is trying to tell us that Vladimir Putin and his invasion of Ukraine is a reason for us to abandon fossil fuels altogether because they're just so volatile that we can't depend on them.
Sell crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
Now, why am I calling her crazy? You might disagree. You might agree. You're welcome to do either at 888-788-9910. I'm calling her crazy because in this clip I'm about to play you, it's very illustrative of where we are in Washington in this moment. On a big Wednesday, I'm in a great mood. You know me. I'm happy to be here. I got a lot going on. I'm going to be on Tucker later doing a pretty cool package that we shot on the mean streets in New York. I'm really excited to share that. I'm actually thrilled that they let me do it. I mean, it's amazing. Biggest show in TV. When that guy says, yeah, hey, come on, get in the game. You get in the game, damn it. You find your helmet. This ain't Thurman Thomas at the Super Bowl. Remember the old Bills running back couldn't find his helmet before the first play of the game? No, the helmet is on, yo. I'm ready to roll. Okay, and I am in a good mood, but I find this all to be so cartoonishly stupid. So what's going on in Washington right now, as you know, is they're trying to leverage your pain at the pump. They're trying to leverage your pain as it pertains to inflation as a means to sell their agenda. Well, inflation's bad, so we're going to pass a climate bill. And you're like, hey, what does that have to do with inflation? As it turns out, nothing, because the Joint Congressional Committee on Taxation, which means members of both parties, reviewed this bill they're trying to pass right now and found out that the Inflation Reduction Act doesn't actually reduce inflation.
You are correct, sir.
So understand that. The Inflation Reduction Act does not reduce inflation. But what does it do? It pushes their climate agenda. Hey, we need more green energy. Okay, at a time when Americans were complaining that they didn't have $5 for a gallon of gas, the Democrats were out there saying, I feel your pain, so you should buy an electric car, which happens to cost, oh, you know, $56,000, $60,000. Yo, if they don't have $5 for gas, they don't have $60,000 for a car. You know that. I know that. but you're a rational, serious person. You're not a politician in Washington just trying to force an agenda down the throats of the American people. But here's Jennifer Granholm, okay, flat out saying, well, you know, this Putin invasion, this is why we can't have fossil fuels. Understand this. 97% of all vehicles on the road in this country are powered by gasoline. Okay, fossil fuels are never, ever, ever going away. And anybody who tells you otherwise isn't a serious person. I can make that claim because every single solitary piece of infrastructure that would manufacture your electric car happens to be created through the use of fossil fuels.
When you're right, you're right, and you're right.
And you know what the other thing they don't tell you is? When they power your electric car, that electricity has to come from somewhere. And you know where that electricity comes from in that instance? Coal. 99.9% of the time. So basically what the Democrats are trying to do in this save the planet gambit that they're selling you, which again is a sale, okay, because every single time they say the world's going to end, it's followed up with,
please give us money.
That's all they mean. Okay, but when they tell you, oh, you know, got to get rid of fossil fuels, we're trying to save the environment, basically all we're really doing is reconfiguring the way we use fossil fuels. So instead of using them to power your vehicle, you're going to use them to make your vehicle. And yes, then ultimately power your vehicle, because again and again and again, what is powering an electric car? It's not running on the sun all by itself. It's not running on the wind. It's running on electricity, which has to come from someplace. And that someplace, 99.99999 times out of 100, is through the use of fossil fuels.
Oh, you're right. And when you're right, you're right. And you're always right.
But in this moment, okay, again, because they do want to, you know, we're saving the world. We got to protect you from climate change. Now, granted, it was an ice age when I was a little kid. We got an ice age coming. We're all going to freeze to death. Run for your lives. We're in big trouble here.
Democrats are so full of crap.
And we say that. Why? Because after the ice age didn't happen, they're like, we're going to melt. It's hot. It's a heat wave. The ice age didn't come because it got so hot. We're going to melt.
Democrats are so full of crap.
10 years went by. We didn't hit any of the temperature thresholds, and it turned into, well, the climate's changing. Yesterday it was raining. Today it's sunny out. We've never seen anything like this in our lives.
Democrats are so full of crap.
But again and again and again, every time the message changed on the surface, there was one constant beneath the surface.
Please give us money.
So understand, okay, Jennifer Granholm, who is out there to do what? Push their agenda. Their agenda is green energy. You got to get green energy. She tells you, and this is so fascinating, because again, it speaks to such a staggering lack of self-awareness. Okay, the claim made here is that, well, the ban on Russian oil just shows you why we can't depend on fossil fuels. Because, you know, from time to time, you can't even take it from the people you're banning. But understand, okay, that doesn't mean we don't have fossil fuels at our disposal. That just means we're banning them from people like Putin who behave badly. It's, you know, some moral justification thing. But understand, that's completely irrelevant in a country like ours that has a 200-year supply of oil.
Oh, wow!
Fossil fuels are not volatile in an energy-independent country. Yo, understand this. We were energy-independent. Energy-independent 2 years ago. Before Biden took office, we were energy independent.
Biden is such a disaster.
He really is, because in him, who ran as a moderate for most of his adult life, becoming a complete pushover for the left. And understand, that's what the Biden presidency is. It is an iTunes user agreement. They just tell the old man to scroll to the bottom and click I agree. And that's been every executive order. That's been every climate policy, whether it was killing the Keystone Energy Pipeline, or trying to negotiate our way back into the Paris Climate Change Agreement, okay, or ending federal subsidies for oil companies and drilling and permits and leases. That is all Biden just being told to scroll to the bottom of the iTunes user agreement and click I agree. That's why we're in the position we're in. It's a bunch of idiots who think they're saving the world are pushing this old man around. But understand, Vladimir Putin and the volatility of the foreign oil market do not affect an energy-independent country. We were a net exporter of oil. So this is a straw man argument. Ah, it's so volatile. Look what they're doing on the other side of the world. The only reason the other side of the world matters is because when it comes to our domestic energy agenda, we're behaving like the mafia. What I mean by that is we're saying, I don't want to get my hands dirty, so I'm going to cut a check and I'm going to have somebody do the deed for me. That's what we're doing. But understand, America produces oil 42% cleaner than anybody we import it from. So when you say, well, America, we're going to be the change we want to see in the world. We're going to save the country. We're going to save the planet. We're not going to produce as much fossil fuels, but we're going to consume the same amount. So we're just going to import it from places that burn it filthier. And oh, by the way, we're now going to have to use additional fuel just to get it here. Okay, it's the dumbest thing you've ever heard. But in their worldview, this whole gambit makes sense.
They're crazy.
I don't know what it is. People say it's a religion. I don't get it. But Jennifer Granholm, here she is telling you, well, the whole Putin thing just shows. We can't be doing this. We got to switch to the green energy. Here it is, clip 27.
Just remember the reason for this surge, though, is, yes, coming out of COVID, but also because when Putin invaded Russia, of course, when Putin invaded Ukraine, Russia is one of the largest Sure. exporters of oil. And all these countries like the United States, Canada, EU said, we're not going to take Russian oil. That pulled all those barrels off the market. So supply and demand were way out of match. So the president tried to increase supply all at the same time as accelerating our movement to clean energy, which is why, I mean, this whole circumstance is really a foot stomp on why we can't rely on the volatility of fossil fuels.
I want to get.
No, you're doing it all wrong.
Yo, this has nothing to do with our reliance on fossil fuels. Again, Putin's actions only affect us because we're not using our own fossil fuels. We are an energy independent nation if we choose to be. We currently are sitting on a 200-year supply of oil. You understand? 200 years. And we're not tapping into it. Instead, we're being affected by what goes on in the world. Okay, and this push, some of them believe it, some of them are just getting rich off of it, but the one thing they both have in common is neither of them are right. This is not just me talking. Let's talk to Steve. He's down in Beaufort, South Carolina. Steve-o.
Hey.
My man.
I had to get you off the speakerphone. I managed to do that with hanging up on you. I'm so proud.
Yo, yeah, you're like me when it comes to technology, because I'm borderline Amish.
Yeah, well, listen, I could drive an Airbus, and you push a lot of buttons on that to make it fly. But, you know, the car and the speakerphone and then getting it back on your cell phone so you don't have that feedback, you know, that's overwhelming at times.
It's a lot to deal with. Isn't it kind of ironic really quickly how they call it a smartphone, but it's made us all dumber?
Oh yeah. You should look at my wife's social media screen time. I'm harassing her about that all the time. getting back to the point, sir.
Yeah.
This AOC thing and, you know, saving the planet and electric cars and stuff, nobody out there can wrap their head around it. 50%, 70% in some places of electricity is generated with fossil fuels.
Yep.
The fossil fuels making the electricity, but they're driving their cars around thinking they're saving the planet. Now, if they have solar panels on their house and they charge up their car from the sun, and they don't touch the grid, yeah, they're doing a good thing. But at the same time, everybody else out there isn't going to have the solar panels. It's a yuppie thing. Having an electric car is a yuppie thing. It is not the solution because the grid can't even handle all the cars that would have to be charged.
You're making a great point. What's so funny is, like, if you look at Germany has implemented everything we want to do, everything we aspire to do, wind, solar, and everything in between. And now they're just opening one coal plant after another because they're having rolling blackouts. They can't meet the demand.
Yeah. It's so true. I could ramble on all the time. I mean, AOC has saved all the blondes, you know, blonde jokes, you know, they've fallen by the wayside of the AOC jokes now. But the only other point I want to make is, you know, I saw that when I was looking through, you know, sending you a tweet just a little bit ago and stuff and heard that you're going to be on Tucker tonight and I'm going to watch you. This is all fine and good. You're wonderful on all these shows. But when is Fox going to get its head out of the sand and give you your own damn show? I mean, you're worthy of it.
Steve-o. Oh, man, you should be my agent. Listen, man.
Well, yeah, I was telling Mikey, you know, it's the time is overdue. I mean, you can hold your own. I can see every time you're a guest on one of these other shows, I can see you're being very cautious. You don't want to steal the show.
No.
You're holding back the whole time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just be that happy medium. Keep making friends. Keep getting invited back. And I predict probably by the end of next year, you got your own primetime show.
Yeah, listen, if I got my, you might be my first guest for this speech. This is good locker room talk, Steve.
Well, when I retire from the airlines and you got to travel further than, you know, Long Island to New York, I'll be your pilot.
Now you're talking. You get me out to Ohio to see Jenny's crazy family. You want to fly a couple of New York to Dayton routes?
Any time for you, man. Anytime.
Oh, Steve-O, this is big talk. All right, we'll talk offline. You got the gig. We don't even run a background check. Clearly, we hired Mikey. You're the best, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. The great Steve telling me to get my own TV show. I already have a show. I'm a busy guy. But I will say this because I've been around it a lot now. It's kind of like doing radio. I listen to radio in a cab so long that I just kind of knew what the show would look like if someone was ever crazy enough to give me one, and lo and behold, it happened. I don't know that anybody's giving me a TV show, but I do know what it should look like. Like, if it happens, we would take over the world within like 3 episodes of actually launching the show.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
It's the rock band that's being forced on the public. Joe Biden presents the electric cars.
Charge all night, drive all day. The government won't let you have a say. Charge it up. Charge it up.
An album that will leave you feeling totally plugged in.
She won't start again. And I have to call the Tesla guy. I'm gonna, she won't start again.
The electric cars. Sure, they're way too expensive, but pretending to save the world is never cheap.
Can't go on, 'cause my money's gone. Oh no, who can give me a loan tonight?
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla, trying to hold this country together on a Wednesday. Not easy to do. You got people like Jennifer Granholm going on CNN of all places.
CNN is the worst.
Trying to tell you with a straight face we'll be more secure when we have more clean energy. Check it out, clip 28.
Think about energy security. If we really want to be nationally secure, we should be energy secure. And that doesn't just mean oil and gas. That means increasing our ability to deploy clean energy, so we're not so reliant upon the volatility of fossil fuels. God. So that means the tax credit provisions in this deal will incentivize the deployment of all kinds of clean energy, wind and solar, yes, but also geothermal, nuclear. I mean, there's a whole array of zero carbon technologies that will be incentivized, and it's very good news.
So
and
that's
reducing
where...
costs for people, by the way.
That is balderdash and hogwash and
Yo, the transition to green energy has not reduced the cost for people. It's the reason your prices are higher, because we are not producing as much at home. But every time they say something to you, like, oh, it's our security, our country will be more secure if we switch to clean energy. No, just understand, okay, we have enough fossil fuels right now for 200 years. We don't need any clean energy. We don't need any of it, okay? Never mind that none of it's clean. That's the scam. It's all coming from China, all of the infrastructure. And, oh, by the way, it requires fossil fuels to run it. There is not one country out there. Just understand this. Germany has a population of about 63 million people, okay? We have a population of 330 million people. Switching to clean energy has failed Germany. They can't generate enough power through solar and wind to supply 63 million people with their daily supply of energy. Okay, if you can't do it for 63 million people, here's a newsflash. Probably not going to work for 330 million.
Bingo.
Okay, but when she says things like security, they use words like that because you hear it. And you're like, well, I want security. I mean, yeah, well, I want us to be secure. Why wouldn't we do that? But understand, we are secure if we rely on our own abundance of resources. I'm not saying you can't have some clean energy. I'm not saying you can't work it in. But this fallacy that we're going to switch to net zero emissions in 10 years or 20, it's not going to happen. It's not realistic. The only thing real right now is the pain you feel in your wallet. And it's there because these people, again, think they're saving the world. But the only thing they're really saving is money because people get rich telling you this crap. Go look at Al Gore. Oh, you got to reduce your carbon footprint. Guy's flying around in private jets, and his electric bill makes Las Vegas look Amish. But again, that's where he's out there, yelling at you with John Kerry. You got to reduce your carbon footprint. I'll be right back. I got to go take a flight on my private jet. We'll talk to you later.
That's just how white folks will do you.
It is Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon. Trying to hold this country together. Things have gotten a little dicey, so I'm bringing in some heavy-duty backup. Joining us now from the great state of Montana, a superstar senator. You know him and love him. Steve Daines back on the show. Hello, Senator.
Jimmy, how are you?
Better now, man. I needed backup today. Today's been such a mess in the radio business. You know they say in horse racing, you've got to be a mutter. You've got to be able to run on a sloppy track. Well, in talk radio right now, we have not had a clean racetrack in like 2 years.
Sounds tough.
Ah, we get by. I mean, it's not like I'm in Washington actually trying to save the country. Like, I'm in charge of the thermostat. I just try to lower the temperature. You actually have to, you know, supply the power and stuff like that. You're the adult in the room, technically speaking.
Jimmy, I'm not sure you've been to D.C. I'm not sure there's any adults left here.
Well, this is the argument I made because I was making this montage. I was playing a montage earlier. When Joe Biden and the Democrats got elected, the media, we have this montage, it's a minute long, of Democrats claiming that the adults are back in the room. That's the claim. It's all kinds of media personalities going, oh, thank God the adults are back in the room. I do believe the adults are back in the room on one small scale, but I don't believe the adults know what room they're in when it comes to Joe Biden.
Jimmy, it's remarkable. You know, just when you think it can't get crazier, just when you think we're on the verge of maybe turning the corner here and seeing a little daylight from the other side of the aisle, they go full lights out with this insane, yet another reckless tax and spending bill. I mean, it's jaw-dropping, Jimmy, what they are proposing. The more we dig into this, mm-hmm. the more you shake your head and say, what are they thinking?
You know, well, this is what I wanted to ask you, okay? Because it's a climate change bill. It's not an inflation bill. They're calling it the Inflation, you know, Reduction Act, but we all know it's going to increase inflation. It's going to raise taxes. So did they basically, knowing they couldn't pass a climate change bill on their own, knowing it didn't have the support anyway, did they basically just Trojan horse it under a more trendy name because people do want to reduce inflation?
Oh, there is.
I lost you for a second. Your cell phone signal went down. No, I don't have you.
Jimmy.
Oh, there you go.
Jimmy, as we've unpacked this bill, you know, they're going to add 80,000 IRS agents, doubling the number of IRS agents. Nothing like doubling the IRS to make us all feel better about things. They've got $40 billion for environmental justice.
Uh-huh.
They've got $1 billion for tree equity. And then when you didn't think it could get any worse, they are giving these significant credits, tax credits, to wealthy people to buy electric vehicles. I'm going to try to have an amendment that says they should include a Honda generator to put in the back of that Tesla and a 5-gallon gas can so that you can fill the generator in case your Tesla runs out of electricity somewhere between, you know, Dallas and Austin. It is absolutely crazy what's going on at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. We're talking to Montana Senator Steve Daines about this silly spending bill in Washington right now. Little bit of a Trojan horse. I was listening to Jennifer Granholm yesterday, your energy secretary, saying, well, you know, the volatility with Vladimir Putin is proof that we need to switch to this green energy because the foreign markets are so volatile. But you being from a state that is so rich in fossil fuels and renewable resources, why do we need Vladimir Putin at all? Technically speaking, we could be doing this all on our own, couldn't we?
Jimmy, I think the American people collectively were shaking their heads when President Biden jumps on the big jet, flies to Saudi Arabia, pleading for more Middle Eastern oil. I don't know what Biden thinks, but here's what I think. How about jumping on that same plane, flying to maybe Midland, Texas, perhaps Williston, North Dakota, perhaps Fairbanks, Alaska? If he would spend some time talking to American producers, they will tell him we have millions and millions of barrels of oil per day increases that we are capable of delivering if they would just get out of the way and let them start producing. It is absolutely shameful. And what they don't understand is Joe Biden doesn't come back to Montana and talk to the Montana families who are staring at that $5 a gallon gas prices and costing $135, $140 to fill up your pickup. When you've got moms who are taking kids back and forth to school and seeing that now they've got to cut back a lot of other things in their budgets because they can't afford the groceries or the gas. Mm-hmm. And this is more than an economic security challenge. This is a national security problem, Jimmy. And that is what is so chilling about the Democrats. And just when you think they would finally wake up out of their woke slumber, suddenly they're doubling down now on this Green New Deal. And you are exactly right. This is about their climate crazy religion. That's what this bill is really about.
Oh, it's so crazy. We're talking to Montana Senator Steve Daines. Yeah, I find it fascinating. And when I did see the IRS, the fact that they're bulking up their staff. And what's interesting about that to me is I have, since I started appearing on the Fox News channel as a host and a contributor, I have been audited twice in like the last 3 years. I'm assuming it's a coincidence, but is it possible that, you know, I don't know, they might have a little bit of an agenda there in Washington?
Well, here's the crazy part about it. If you dial the IRS helpline right now, the 1-800 number, they're only answering about 10% of the calls. And you'll probably hear some, you know, Olivia Newton-John great music from the 70s for about 30 or 40 minutes while you do that. And I liked Olivia Newton-John when I was in high school. I thought she was a great singer. But why aren't they investing in maybe customer service to serve the taxpayers versus 80,000 more agents that are going to go after harass taxpayers? That's where they're headed with this. And that's just one of many provisions in this bill that ought to keep all of us awake at night. And that's what we got to do all we can to stop it.
Well, then, all right. So this, when I hear that, right, it almost speaks to, you know, a desperation in the sense that their spending has gotten so out of control, we're now basically looking under couch cushions for more revenue. But one could make an argument that we don't have a revenue problem as a country. I would think the bigger problem is spending.
No doubt. By every measure, if you look at percentage of GDP on revenue versus spending, it is a spending problem. That is 100% conclusive. And so we're not on a sustainable path. Jimmy, we're at $30 trillion of debt, and it's increasing now in almost a logarithmic function, like $1 trillion a year as far as we can see, and then it compounds when you start looking at interest rates going up. This really is a huge problem, and there is no will. There's no will here in Washington to address this fundamental issue. The first bill I introduced when I came to Congress was pretty simple because I came from the private sector for 28 years. You know, if I didn't deliver results, Jimmy, I didn't have a job.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is this. If we can't balance the budget here in Washington, we shouldn't get paid. Put the pain on the members of Congress, not on the American people.
Can you imagine? I mean, it would never happen. I mean, in my experience, this is my assessment of Washington, and you're there, so you probably speak to this more. But Washington strikes me as a place where about 85% of the employees have figured out the bare minimum they need to do in order to keep their job. And then there's, you know, 15% of people that are invested in working and trying to actually deliver for the company. I mean, where would you say I'm at on the percentage scale? Does that sound accurate? Is it higher? Is it lower?
No, you're about right. And you look at the fact that government has no competition. You know, again, when I was in the private sector, we woke up every morning wanting to do better, which is called delivering value, doing more for less money. That's called value for your customers because there's competition. When you wake up and go to work in the federal government, just tell me who's your competition. Nobody. It's a captive market. And so when you lack any competitive forces to make government work better, it comes down to leadership. That's why what's going on in our states is so important. These red state governors who are shaking things up, they're like the CEOs of their states. They're holding people accountable, like our governor, Gianforte in Montana. Mm-hmm. He's going after regulations requiring results and improvement out of government, making government work better. But it has to come from the top. Sadly, here in Washington, there's really none of that going on.
Yeah, nothing. It's really weird. I feel like they've turned the Biden presidency into an iTunes user agreement. You know how they just make you scroll to the bottom and click I agree and nobody even reads it? I feel like I do. I feel like they've just hijacked his presidency. They're just like, scroll to the bottom and we'll kill the pipeline, you know? Because he was not this guy prior to becoming president, but it almost feels like he's not calling the plays. Do you ever get that sense?
Absolutely. Just watch what's going on in every press conference of the few that he has and watch how he responds and watch how his communication staff responds. They read right off of scripts. They have no ability at all to improvise and think for themselves. It's all prescripted by lefties. But just remember something here, too. I just want to make an important point here for those who are listening today, and that is the importance of elections. Jimmy, if we had one more Republican senator, we would stop this nonsense today. We would. We're one seat short of stopping this train wreck. And that's why what's coming up in November is so, so important. I think that's why you're seeing the Democrats just going for broke now, because they realize this is their last gasp, because the American people get to have the next say in the next election. And there's a red wave building here, unlike I've seen in my lifetime. And so they know that the shot clock is running out for them. And I think what they've got going on right now is their last, it's a Hail Mary pass, and they're going to try to complete this pass with this massive, reckless tax and spending bill.
Yeah, it's stupid. We got to play some defense in D.C., my man, because that is what we're watching. It's a shopping spree. They know they have 5 minutes left to throw everything in the cart that they want, and that's what we're watching. We're watching a far-left shopping spree. So feel free to cut the brakes in the shopping cart or whatever you got to do, my man. We're all counting on you. No pressure.
Hey, we've got the 2-minute drill going on right now on defense, doing all we can.
All right, let's go. Give him help.
Appreciate the air cover you're giving us, Jimmy. Thank you.
My man, good luck. I'll see you soon. Senator Steve Daines from the great state of Montana. That's what's going on. It is not a tax problem. It's not a revenue problem. And yes, I have been audited. Jenny Fallon can attest to this. I get audited like all the time. And it's crazy. It's not even like I didn't come into this with like money or anything, but I keep saying to myself, I'm like, what kind of shape is the country in if they're looking for my money? They're like, oh, you got to, Jenny had a relative pass away through some type of trust one way or the other. There was like literally an $82 penalty that we didn't pay, like an $82 fee we should have paid for some type of transfer of money. And I'm like, dude, if you're shaking me down for $82, like what kind of shape is our government really in?
I got a bad feeling about this.
It's not good, man. You got to stop spending money. Even Alex knows. Alex is listening. He's in Brooklyn. Yo, Alex.
Hey, what's up, Jimmy? Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that there's even a shape to describe the shape of the country at this point. But I think what the Democrats are doing now, because we're in this inflation crisis, they're taking woke to a whole new level. We're in this inflation slash recession, and what the Democrats are doing is they want to solve the problem. So they're planning on spending more money by passing a bill that I like to call an inflation bill. And that's how they're going to solve the solution. So they're identifying the problem as a solution, because one of the biggest factors of the recession that we're in right now, what brought us to that point, is all the spending that we have done in the past. And the way they're solving it is by spending more money. So I guess the only reasonable explanation for why they're doing what they're doing is that they're identifying the problem as a solution. And the problem is the spending of the money.
It's so true. But they're about to tell us that the economy, they're going to be like, well, the economy doesn't identify as being in debt. So if you say we're in debt, then you're misgendering the economy and you're transphobic. Like, that's what we're down to now. Like, we're not even having a real conversation about anything. When you can get on TV and tell us you're passing an Inflation Reduction Act that increases inflation, like, we're in a really, like, far gone place, no?
Well, listen, if he can identify as a she, why can't we identify anything else as anything else?
That's
the most common sense thing is that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, it's been known for thousands of years that it's like that. So once you change that, why can't we at least change the definition of what a recession is?
I agree, but I think I just got banned from Disney World for agreeing with you on that.
So I'm sorry about that.
We'll have to go to Coney Island instead. Save me some tickets for the Cyclone, okay, Alex?
I'll do that for you.
Be well. Alex losing the Mickey Mouse vote.
Now listen, little boy.
A show so good, it's hard to describe.
It's not a matter of, it's a matter of, you just, oh, in the club, I mean, and you know.
It's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
You know, so,
question was, could he make it around the base paths unassisted? You know, I said it once before, a few days ago, that Kirk Gibson was not the most valuable player, that the most valuable player for the Dodgers was Tinkerbell. But tonight, I think Tinkerbell backed off for Kirk Gibson.
It is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla, saluting the late, great Vince Scully. 67 years. Behind the microphone, calling Dodger baseball. That was a signature call. It's time for Dodgers baseball. He was, of course, an icon who called not only the Kirk Gibson home run, but 25 World Series in total. A guy who began on the Brooklyn Dodgers, made his way west to Los Angeles, and was as good of a part of Major League Baseball as anything we've ever known. And this was a guy who literally saw everything, from the Gibson home run to Jackie Robinson helping to integrate the National League at the time. He even saw something no one even believes happened, but it is in fact true that the New York Mets won a World Series in 1986. No one believes me when I say it, but Josh has proof. Take it away.
It's up to Bob Stanley, and it's up to Mookie Wilson, and it's going to go to the backstop. Here comes Mitchell to score the tying run, and Ray Knight is at second base. So the winning run is at second base with two out, 3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it.
That was, of course, Game 6 of the 1986 World Series, the famous Bill Buckner ground ball, as called by the late, great Vin Scully. And yes, the Mets did go on to win it in Game 7 with Jesse Orozco getting the strikeout and everybody storming the field. It was amazing, other than the fact that Dwight Gooden and Darryl Strawberry snorted the third baseline. It was a sight to behold, and Vin Scully, as big a part of calling that action as anybody. I have to tell you, man, I opened the show on him. I closed the show on him for a reason. If you're in the broadcasting business, if you're ever lucky enough to talk into a microphone for pay, you have to have great reverence and respect for people like Vin Scully, because there is only a demand for spoken word content because of the people like him who spoke it so well. And nobody spoke it better than Vin Scully, who did, in fact, sadly leave us late last night after 67 years behind the mic in Chavez Ravine. In total, he spent 94 great years on this planet. We are forever thankful for Vin Scully and all the people who recognize the excellence in him, all the people who love Major League Baseball and saw its value as our national pastime before it became fighting on Twitter. But one way or the other, there was nobody classier. There was nobody better. It is an honor to share a distant profession with Vin Scully. But this show's over, so pay up and get out.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.